The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov. It's weird to say Shavuot Tov on a Wednesday, but there you have it.
Boker Tov, yes, Shavuot Tov it is. I mean, after the Chag, obviously we're in the middle of the week and we're only just really starting the week. Our week, of course, started in earnest yesterday. Not being a Chag in Israel yesterday. Mm-hmm. Shavuot this year, very much a different situation for Israel. Whereas under normal circumstances, pre-corona, and when things are slightly quieter, Jerusalem would be abuzz in the early hours of the morning as people descend upon the Kotel, having spent most of the night up learning Shiurim during the Tikkun Leil Shavuot. This year, unfortunately, that was not the case. People were warned to be near to bomb shelters, not to venture too far away from home. Many of the Shavuot, the usual Shavuot learning activities, had to be cancelled because bomb shelters needed to be considered. People had to be not only within a certain distance of a bomb shelter, but also not too many people gathered in one location so that the local bomb shelter would be big enough to accommodate people in the event that they needed to take cover. Shelling has continued from Gaza. The IDF activities have continued. We are now on day 10 of Operation Guardian of the Walls, and it seems as if though it's going to be as busy a day as it has been over the last 10 days, even though in all honesty, there was a lull in shelling activity overnight, at least in terms of the shells that came from Gaza. There was a 3-hour period during the night when things were quiet. Especially those along the Gaza border will have been very, very grateful and thankful to have that hiatus, a little period of quiet, even though most of them would be sleeping in their bomb shelters under the current circumstances. It wouldn't make any sense at all for people within the Gaza border area to venture out of their bomb shelters during the night, and most of them, those who have the ability to do so, would be sleeping in their bomb shelters. Otherwise, they would hardly get any sleep at all. And in fact, the IDF has come out on a few occasions saying, go to your bomb shelters and stay there. Not a question of being near a bomb shelter, be alert. Go into your bomb shelters and stay there as much as you can. That's effectively what many of the messages have been coming from the IDF, and from particularly the Home Front Command, who've been policing the way in which civilians have been behaving during the period of conflict. So it's certainly been a stressful time. Almost 4,000 missiles now having been fired from Gaza over the past 10 days. You can do your own sums to work out what that means on a daily basis and how many missiles per hour. There are some frightening pictures of 30 missiles, 40 missiles being fired almost at once, just into the night sky. You can see literally almost like a fireworks display as the missiles emanate from Gaza. And on the other hand, the Iron Dome coming to intercept in order to try to make sure that as few of those missiles as possible will penetrate. Unfortunately, Iron Dome is only 90% effective, and 90% sounds like a good thing until you work out that 10% means 400 missiles have been able to land over the 10 days. If you take 4,000 and you take the 10% hit miss rate, that means 400 missiles have been allowed to land. Admittedly, not all of them have done damage, and not all of them have caused death or injury. But even those missiles that are intercepted by Iron Dome need to fall somewhere. The shrapnel from the explosion, from the interception, needs to fall somewhere. And even though the Iron Dome algorithm does direct the hit, does direct the interception to try to engineer it to take place over an uninhabited area, that's not always possible. Sometimes the trajectory of the missile is continuously over a residential or inhabited area, and therefore the interception, by definition, has no choice but to take place over an inhabited area. And sometimes that shrapnel can be very, very damaging indeed. The shrapnel has hurt people. It has caused damage. It is, there have been people who've been killed. So far, the list of people who've been killed now numbers 12, including two Thai workers, foreign workers who were killed yesterday in the southern part of Israel. They were in a packing facility when a missile hit that facility. Two of them were killed almost instantaneously. Quite a number of others were injured. Many questions being asked about why they weren't in protective facilities, why they weren't in a bomb shelter at the time. Those questions, I hope, will be answered in due course. Unfortunately, in the meantime, the number of casualties increases. As I said already, 12 people dead, quite a few people having been injured, just simply running to bomb shelters, quite a number of people suffering from shock, from trauma as a result of having to live under these conditions. So all in all, it's been a very, very busy time with a lot of activity. The IDF seems to have been operating very much using specific intelligence, lots and lots of missiles being directed towards intelligence facilities, towards tunnels that go underneath Gaza, a huge amount of tunnel infrastructure having been targeted and exploded, weapons construction facilities, the homes of individuals who have been guiding the operation in some of the wealthiest areas of Gaza. And even though people wouldn't really know it, but there is a millionaires area within Gaza called the Rimal neighborhood that has been targeted because apparently there were tunnels and activities taking place within some of the villas in that that neighborhood. There is a billionaires yacht club, which is also on the coast and not far from there. So that neighborhood has particularly come under target. We understand that the IDF has tried at least on two occasions over the last 10 days to kill the Hamas chief of military operations, the head of the military arm of Hamas, Mohammed Deif. Apparently he's been targeted at least on two occasions and has managed to escape so far. The way in which he escapes seems to be quite amazing, because he's a man who's already been targeted by the IDF on a few previous occasions. He's a little bit like the Scarlet Pimpernel. He seems to manage to escape every time they try to target him. He has suffered some significant injuries. We understand that he has lost an eye, he has lost an arm, and apparently also doesn't have legs as a result of injuries that he has sustained through attacks by the IDF trying to get hold of him. And apparently those attacks have continued over the past few days. He apparently escaped very, very narrowly on at least two occasions in the last week. But the IDF seems to believe that they will still be able to get hold of him. He would be a very, very significant takedown, a very significant target, if they were indeed able to get hold of him. But that's the level of person that the IDF has really been going after. Even the leader of Gaza, the head of Gaza, the head of Hamas in Gaza, Yanyar Sinwar, his home was actually attacked in that millionaires area of Gaza. So nobody is off the list at the moment. And at the IDF activities continue. There was a little hiatus yesterday, a humanitarian, a 5-hour period that was agreed upon, during which fire was held back from both sides, until unfortunately that was dishonored when there was a further rocket fire towards the Erez crossing, which had been opened in order to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. Some of the convoys, IDF personnel who were in that area seemed to have been targeted for reasons which are not clear. An IDF soldier was injured in that particular attack yesterday, then during the course of yesterday and also to some degree last night, the rocket fire and the IDF attacks on Gaza have continued. So that's really the current situation that we're in. That's how things are panning out at the moment. According to statements by the IDF and to Minister of Defense Benny Gantz, the IDF still has a long list of targets that they would like to attack of Hamas. The IDF generally would draw up a list of its most important targets that it would like to attack in the event that hostility like this breaks out. Apparently, they are still going down their list, have many, many more Hamas targets to attack. And so, therefore, that is the reason, it seems, why Israel is less inclined right now to be willing to enter into a ceasefire arrangement, even though, of course, pressure is building to enter into a ceasefire.
One of the big stories is, of course, the attack or the bombing of the building that housed Al Jazeera and Associated Press. Has there been more discussion or information around this? Because there was a tremendous outcry, of course, from Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and every journalist in the world, none of whom actually stopped to say, but why aren't we seeing information coming out of Gaza if we have got these officers there? Because we really don't get much information from there.
So there has been quite a lot written in the press about that particular attack, including the fact that it's, at least in some newspaper articles I've seen, that evidence was offered to the United States government showing a so-called smoking gun from that particular building, proving that Hamas was in fact operating from that particular building. And so there has been a huge outcry because obviously it was directed towards a building that housed international press. But as has been Hamas's modus operandi up until now, and it's actually officially considered to be a war crime when military personnel operate out of civilian areas. That is just laid down in the law as a war crime, and there can be absolutely no doubt in anybody's minds that Hamas do this on a daily basis, that they are attacking Israel, they are firing missiles towards Israel from within civilian areas and from within buildings like the one that was used by the Associated Press. But I'd like to take even a step further just to allow listeners to understand how the IDF operates when it comes to having to attack buildings which are of mixed use, which means also inhabited by civilians while being used by Hamas for military purposes. So the IDF has a list of the names and addresses and phone numbers of all the people who are in that building, who live there. They know everything about them. And before an attack takes place in a building like that, IDF drones will be around watching all of the activities that are going on and feeding that information back in real time to people who are watching this from within the IDF. They know where people are specifically at every moment in time. They phone them up to say, this is what's going to happen, that you should evacuate the building because the IDF are planning to attack it within an X period of time. And it has been even known to happen that the IDF phone a person up to say, Mohammed, we've warned you to get out of the building. We're going to be attacking soon. Why are you still in the kitchen? Why do you not vacate the building? Get out right away. Because they are literally watching what everybody is doing. And that will certainly have been the case in that building, which was housed by the Associated Press and Al Jazeera. People would have been warned in good time that this is what's going to happen and that they should steer clear of the area. The IDF has also developed the system of what they call roof knocking, because what then people did was, instead of vacating the building, they understood that if they went onto the roof and showed the pilots that there were civilians around, that that would effectively prevent the pilots from being willing to drop any explosive on that building. So that now they had developed, it actually was in Operation Cast Lead, where they developed the system, what they call roof knocking, where they drop a small explosive device on the opposite side of the building from where the people are located. It doesn't generally do any damage or doesn't generally harm the people on the roof. They can drop it so precisely that it's really away from the individuals who are there, but it frightens them enough to get them to evacuate the area, to allow the IDF to then to drop a heavier missile in order to take care of the military aspects of that building, perhaps the tunnels that lie underneath, perhaps the arms and ammunition that are being housed in that building. So that's the modus operandi, excuse me, that the IDF use on a daily basis in order to try to prevent civilian casualties. And I've no doubt that the same system would absolutely have been used in this building that was housed by the press in Gaza. But unfortunately, when it's also being used by military personnel, there are times when there is no choice but to have to take out that threat.
Yeah, it's just quite incredible, because we're seeing so much pushback, and especially around that, you know, you touch the press on their press, and suddenly everybody gets becomes very, 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 very sensitive around it, even if there is culpability on that side. Michael says, we know that 200 odd Gazans killed. I don't know if they were odd Gazans. They could have been regular Gazans. But how come no mention of all the Hamas, especially inside all of the tunnels? I'm not quite sure the question. I think that Michael, as far as I know, the 200 Gazans would include Hamas operatives. Maybe not.
That's correct. Hmm? Yeah, the people who've been killed in Gaza, they don't generally distinguish between the operatives and civilians. They try very much to cloud the information in order to make it look as if though they are mostly civilian casualties. They also don't distinguish between people who've been killed by Israeli fire as opposed to people who've been killed by Hamas fire, because let's bear in mind that quite a number of these rockets that have been fired from Gaza, something like 200 all in all, have not even made it over the Gaza border and have landed somewhere within Gaza. And bearing in mind that if they're being fired from civilian areas, the likelihood is that they could easily harm kill local civilians in the area if they fail to be able to take off successfully from their launch site. So the number of Gazans that are killed is unclear. We get information, but we're not quite sure how much of it we really believe. And it would certainly include the operatives as well as any civilian casualties, because as I said before, there's no distinction made between the two.
Absolutely right, and that's where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.